Broadcasting
2 years ago,
from atop the Rocky Mountains, the crossroads of the West. You are listening to the Liberty Roundtable Radio Talk Show.
2 years ago, I wrote a song called Coal Miner's Daughter. And I know a little bit about this girl because I just happen to be that coal miner's daughter. Well, I was born to coal miner's daughter. In a cabin on a hill in Butcher Holler. We were poor, but we had love. That's the one thing that Daddy made sure of. He shoveled coal.
Liberty Round Table Live, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Sam Bushman. Chris Carlson's with me, ladies and gentlemen. Without God, we can never win. With God, we can never lose. Freedom is the Lord's, but we need to be engaged in the fight. Welcome to the broadcast, and welcome, Chris Carlson.
Yes, Sam, I will go ahead and officially introduce that introduction. Without God, we cannot win. With God, we cannot lose. The battle for freedom is the Lord's, but we need to be engaged in the fight. Lieutenant Carlson reporting for duty, sir.
Wow. Yeah, what an example of lyrics, ladies and gentlemen, to think about. The lyrics she sang was incredible. We mourn the passage of a great American icon, Loretta Lynn. Chris?
Yep. Normally, I don't eulogize celebrities, Sam. However, Loretta Lynn is the exception to the rule. And I would say her companion in singing, Dolly Parton, was probably up there with her. She came from a poor family in rural Kentucky, and her 1971 hit song, Coal Miner's Daughter, that she wrote herself. Sorry, Sam, I get emotional about these things and I'm choking up right now. I'm not just pausing because I can't remember what I'm gonna say, but it memorialized and romanticized her humble beginnings and the words that you just said. And let me read some of those in case you didn't pick it up. In a cabin. I'm sorry, Sam. In a cabin on a hill in Butcher Holler, we were poor, but we had love. That's the one thing that Daddy made sure of. He shoveled coal to make a poor man's dollar. I'm so sorry, Sam. This takes me back to a bygone era in American life where we enjoyed the simpler things and we were close to God when we eulogized and we glorified God and reading his scriptures and hard work and reliance on each other and reliance on God. I mean, it just, and she was 90 years old, Loretta Lynn was, and she stuck with her husband for 48 years, Sam. And her husband wasn't a paragon of righteousness, unfortunately. But they were married when Loretta Lynn was 15 years of age. They had four children before her big break in 1960. So she was 28 years old before she even hit the country music scene. She had a number one country hit, Honky Tonk Girl. She credits her husband, Oliver Doolittle Lynn, the one that I just referred to, and I don't mean to glorify philandering and drinking, but he was a philanderer and he was a drinker. unfortunately. But again, as I mentioned, they were together for 48 years, almost 50 years were they together. And when he passed away in 1996, he loved him so much that he wrote a song memorializing their relationship, as tumultuous as it may have been. So, and I don't mean to spend too much time on celebrities. Like I say, I don't memorialize.
Nah, but we do. But we do want to take time to focus on what they stood for, and who they were. While music at the time was focusing on sex, drugs, and rock and roll, she wrote from a different playbook. Chris.
Sorry, Sam. She did. And like I said, I'm not much of a country music fan, but I do listen. Most of my music that I listen to comes from the 1950s, 60s, and 70s. And that's when music was pure. A lot of it I listen to, I admit, does not have the most wholesome lyrics. But you could be guaranteed, if you're listening to Loretta Lynn, you're listening to pure Americana. And she loved God. She loved her country. She loved her husband, in spite of his flaws, and she loved life. She loved life, and she lived life. She had 6 children total during her lifetime. She wrote a song called One's on the Way, and while she recognized, I mean, she herself was a celebrity from 1960 on. She was recognized in the country music industry as this great songwriter, because she wrote her own songs, and she sang them. She had a beautiful voice. But she also raised a family, Sam, and that's something that you don't see a whole lot of among celebrities today. And she loved her family so much. She loved her children. She loved her husband. And while she was watching the news about the glamorous lifestyle of celebrities like Raquel Welch, and she mentions a Debbie in this song, I'll just read those lyrics. I don't know if you've queued up that song. It's called One's on the Way. It's one of my favorite songs ever.
I got it queued up to come out of the next segment, but you can introduce the lyrics in advance, my friend.
Okay. But basically what the song does, it's a contrast song. So she's watching the news as she's raising her kids in Topeka, Kansas, and she's talking about Raquel Welch just signed a $1 million pact, and Debbie's out in Vegas working up a brand new act. While the TV show on Newlyweds, that's the Newlywed game that she's referring to, a real fun game to play. But then she contrasts that with her mundane day-to-day raising children lifestyle. But she says, here in Topeka, the screen doors are slamming. The coffee is a-boiling over, the wash needs a hanging. One wants a cookie in, one wants a changing, and one's on the way. Sorry, I'm... While other people are being memorialized and glorified because of their glamorous lifestyle, she's memorializing and glorifying the mundane day-to-day lifestyle of a mother and a wife. And I just think that's great. And I wish we would focus on the more important things in life, which are raising children. I would like to announce, by the way, Sam, I am a first-time new grandfather as of yesterday, and I just want to say how proud I am to have my first grandson born in Dallas, Texas, to my oldest daughter and my son-in-law, and my wife's out there helping to tend to that new miracle that's been brought into this world, and maybe that's why I'm so emotional. But I apologize. So we'll go ahead and listen to that One's on the Way song. And I just wish more celebrities enjoyed and appreciated the more simple things in life, like raising kids and being a 48-year wife to their husband that they married when they were 15 years of age. And I know that's pretty young, and I'm not promoting that, but, you know, that's what they did back then.
You know, one of the things about country music, Chris, that's important to understand is country music is about storytelling. Country music is about life, yes, and life's experiences. And I'm not all for the drinking songs and the drug songs and the cheating songs and the, you know, all that kind of stuff. But I am for storytelling, and I am for realism in life. You know, when you're Loretta Lynn and you're married to a husband that doesn't have the right moral values, but you hang in there and have children and raise your children and love them, and you stand for what's right, and you sing about different things than the glorification of sex, drugs, and rock and roll. When you think about raising a family and a life that she was very familiar with, when you sing about her tumultuous married life.
Yeah.
Her priorities were her family. Her priorities were God. She married at age 15. She had four children, ladies and gentlemen, before she ever became important. Now, she credits her husband, for helping her break out. He gave her a guitar and, you know, that kind of stuff. But you know what? Artists like Loretta Lynn, Dolly Parton, and others were able to convey great American values, ladies and gentlemen, like hard work, right? Biblical teaching.
Yeah.
Loving and honoring your parents. Wow, this comes straight out of the Ten Commandments, ladies and gentlemen. Gratitude for what one has. Very rare in our society today. They want it all, and they want it all now, right? But you know what? Being grateful for what one has. Enjoying the simple things in life. Singing and glorifying hard work. You know what? They don't make music like that anymore, ladies and gentlemen. We are relegated to listening to the oldies to get that done. But we got to bring us back to a simpler, any more righteous period in American history. I'll tell you what she said when asked about traditional marriage. She said this in the mainstream, ladies and gentlemen. What guts? The quote in seconds.
The Foundation for Moral Law is a nonprofit legal foundation committed to protecting our unalienable right to publicly acknowledge God. The Foundation for Moral Law exists to restore the knowledge of God in law and government and to acknowledge and defend the truth that man is endowed with rights not by our fellow man, but by God. The foundation maintains a twofold focus. First, litigation within state and federal courts. Second, education. Conducting seminars to teach the necessity and importance of acknowledging God in law and government. How can you help? Please make a tax-deductible contribution, allowing foundation attorneys to continue the fight. You may also purchase various foundation products as well at morallaw.org. Located in Montgomery, Alabama, the Foundation for Moral Law is a nonprofit, tax-exempt 501c3, founded by Judge Roy Moore. Please partner with us to achieve this important mission. morallaw.org.
Do you treasure your liberty? Well, at LovingLiberty.net, we most certainly do. And we want to help protect your liberty, too. Become part of the family. Everyone knows that the core of any society is the family. Therefore, the government should foster and protect the integrity of its family, we the people. Won't you join us as a Loving Liberty sponsor to help us promote the principles in the 5,000-year leap? Let's restore the miracle that changed the world at LovingLiberty.net.
As you are aware, America is divided over every fault line possible. This is intentionally fostered by those who do not love God, family, or country. We believe a peaceful future as a free people absolutely depends on civility. Clarion Call for Civility is looking for funding and volunteers at every level to make our hopes and efforts a reality. Please donate, sign our pledge, and help us in our sacred cause. Please visit callforcivility.com for more details. callforcivility.com.
Doing a brand new dance, and the White House social season should be glittering and gay. But here in Topeka, the rain is a falling, the faucet is a dripping, and the kids are a balling. One of them a toddling, and one is a crawling, and
one's on the way.
$1 million pact, and Debbie's out in Vegas working up a brand new act, while the TV's showing new real fun game to play. But here in Topeka, the screen doors are banging, the coffee's boiling over and the wash needs a hanging. One wants a cookie and one wants a changing, and
one's on the way.
Now what was I doing? Jimmy, get away from there.
Oh, yeah. So in November.
All right, back with you live, ladies and gentlemen. Think about it. In 2010 in modern times, Loretta Lynn in public says, Chris? No, not you, honey. I was
talking to the. Well, she was asked whether she believes in the importance of traditional marriage. And her answer was, and you can see her libertarian side coming out at the very end, but initially she says, I'm still an old Bible girl. Because as you remember in the coal miner's daughter, she memorializes the fact that her mother, by a coal oil lamp, read the Bible to her and her siblings. But she says, God said you need to be a woman and a man. And then here's her libertarian side, but everybody to their own. So, and I agree with that, Sam. I agree 100% with that. Obviously,
ladies and gentlemen, that is the American way, right?
Yeah, it's the American way. You know, God made a man to be a man, and he made a woman to be a woman, and we should never confuse those roles. And that's what made America strong, and that's why we are still, you know, for the most part, strong as a nation, but we are dwindling fast because we're confused about those roles. Anyway, and that's Loretta Lynn, and she was a genuine human being, and she never, ever became a part of the celebrity scene that she, you know, sang about in that song. You know, I think she was able to relate to both sides of life, the mundane day-to-day, being a wife, being a mother. And then, you know, obviously she had her celebrity friends that she was able to relate to as well, because she was, in fact, a very famous and very beloved celebrity. But, and I think that if she were, you know, we were able to meet her, Sam, that she would act like our next door neighbor. She wouldn't put on airs, and she wouldn't think that she's more important than anybody. That's just the type of person that she was. So I listen to country music to a degree, but I usually limit that to people like Loretta Lynn and Dolly Parton, who I think falls under that same category. And I would like to eulogize and memorialize her life and her music as a great American icon and say, rest in peace, Loretta Lynn. May your works here on earth follow you throughout the eternities. So God bless Loretta Lynn.
And ladies Sorry. And gentlemen, I want you to understand what the issue is here that we focus on. I listen to a lot of country music, and I realize there's a lot of drinking and fighting and melting down and everything. You know, they joke and say, what do you get when you play a country song backwards? And you get your dog back, you get your house back, you get your first and second wives back, you get your, you know. And it's funny, but you know, in all seriousness, there's a lot of good, I mean a ton of good, country songs about camping, about love, about families. Even modern day songs, to a great degree, are good. I mean, there's one song by Kenny Chesney called The Good Stuff. And it starts out and he gets in a fight with his wife. So he's heading around aimlessly and he sees a bar and he walks in, man. He said, you know what? What will it be? And the guy says, man, I want the good stuff. So the bartender reaches around and grabs a jug of milk, pours the guy some milk, and they have a great conversation. And there's a photo, and he learns about, hey, the bartender used to be an alcoholic, but he quit drinking for his love, for his wife. And she died from cancer or whatever, and he misses her. But his son getting married. And so they talk, and the good stuff is you got to go back home to her, dude. You can't just drink. You got to go and drink milk. And talk with a friend. And an hour passes, and they talk about the things that matter most in life. Pretty soon the guy tells him, you know what? You got to go home and tell her you're sorry. You got to love her. You know what? Go home and work it out, man. So the bartender literally gives him a glass of milk in this song. Okay, there's a lot of good country music out there, folks. You just got to learn how to find it. And, you know, Cameron, our producer, doesn't like country music because he thinks it's just tearing your beer cry stuff. And a lot of it is, I agree. But a lot of it's really good, and so I make it this challenge where I send my friends these country songs that have these incredible lyrics. And to whenever I send one to Cameron, he listens to it, and he goes, man, that one's all right. I like that one. See, and so you just got to learn to find what's good in life. And the reason I'm spending time on this is because that's really the point. When we say rest in peace, Loretta Lynn, you know what? We're not talking about a rock star here. We generally don't eulogize celebrities. That's true. But in this case, we're making an exception because of what they taught for or taught about. When the most popular music is sex, drugs, and rock and roll, but you find somebody, you know what? We need to kind of speak out about what we want, what we believe in, what we focus on, right? So there you have it, folks.
Yeah,
it's really important to understand this stuff. It's understand that, you know what? Great American values are really what we're talking about here. So we're not really focusing on rock stars. We are focusing on the fact that they don't make music like that anymore for the most part. You know what? We got to look at the oldies to get a lot of them. But there's some today still, and we need to seek them out and find them and share them and encourage them. Think about in 2010, you're asked about, hey, the importance of marriage. Your husband's a snake and a bad guy, but yet, you know, you say, I'm a Bible girl, man. I believe that, you know what? I'm a woman. He's a man. And man and woman are supposed to be together. That's God's plan. See, you know, how many are even willing to say that even if they believe that today? Very few. And that's what we're trying to bring back. That's what we're focusing on, Chris.
Yeah, and I remember Dolly Parton in an interview, and I listened to this firsthand. I wish I could remember more of the context, but she was asked a similar question, and she came right out and said, you know, I like men. No, I'm not going to diss on men and criticize them and, you know, find all of these idiosyncrasies. I like men. And that's what I like about a lot of country music performers, but I'm sure there are many more like Dolly Parton and Loretta Lynn out there. And you, like you said, about some of those lyrics are pretty good. They're pretty clever. You know, like you were talking about all my exes live in Texas. I've heard that song and I like that. Oh, by the way, I'll do Kenny McChesney up one. I've got, not only do I have milk in my refrigerator, Sam, I've got raw milk in my refrigerator. So I guess maybe I'm on the right track.
Yeah, so here's the Kenny Chesney song lyrics. Me and my lady had our first big fight. So I drove around till I saw the neon lights, a corner bar, and it just seemed right. So I pulled up. Not a soul around but the old barkeep, down at the end looking half asleep. When he walked up and said, what'll it be? I said, the good stuff. He didn't reach around for the whiskey. He didn't pour me a beer. His blue eyes kind of went misty. He said, you can't find that here, because it's a first long kiss on a second date. Mama's all worried when you get home late and dropping the ring in the spaghetti plate because your hands are shaking so much. And it's the way that she looks with the rice in her hair, eating burnt suppers the whole first year and asking for seconds to keep her from tearing up. Yeah, man, that's the good stuff. He grabbed the carton of milk and he poured a glass. And I smiled and said, I'll have some of that. We sat there and talked as an hour passed, like old friends. I saw a black and white picture and it caught my stare. It was a pretty girl with bouffant hair. He said, that's my Bonnie. Taken about a year after we were wed. He said, I spent 5 years in the bar when the cancer took her from me. But I've been sober 3 years now. Because the one thing stronger than the whiskey was the sight of her holding my baby girl, the way she adored that string of pearls. I gave her the day that our youngest boy, Earl, married his high school love. And it's a new T-shirt saying I'm a new grandpa. Being right there as the time got small and holding her hand when the good Lord called her up. Yeah, man, that's the good stuff. He said when you get home, she'll start to cry. When she says, I'm sorry, say, so am I. And look into those eyes so deep in love and drink it up. Because that's the good stuff. That's the good stuff. You are listening to the one and only Liberty Roundtable Live.
Claiming liberty across the land. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
USA Radio News.
A federal court of appeals has put in place a temporary block on President Joe Biden's student debt forgiveness program after granting a stay Friday evening. The 8th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals sided with six Republican-led states that sued the administration. The court temporarily halted the program, which would have forgiven up to $10,000 in debt for eligible non-Pell Grant recipients until consideration of an injunction is completed. Chicago is facing a colder, snowier season than it's seen in years, according to forecasters. The culprit behind the weather is a classic La Niña pattern, which is expected to occur for the third year in a row, according to the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. NOAA reports that Milwaukee, Detroit, and other cities in the Great Lakes region will likely be hit just as hard. Ukrainian forces bombarded Russian positions in the occupied and illegally annexed southern Kherson region, targeting resupply routes across a major river while inching closer to a full assault on one of the first urban areas Russia captured after invading the country. Five Nevada deputies were hospitalized after they were exposed to fentanyl during a drug bust carried out as part of a criminal investigation. The Douglas County deputies are all in stable condition and are being released from the hospital. This is USA Radio News.
Think of everything you do to provide for your family. A home, food on the table, healthcare, vacations, and saving for your kids' education. It's all good as long as you're alive. But it's only a drop in the bucket of what they'll need if you die without life insurance. Buying term life insurance is not something you can afford to put off. Call the Term Life Line now for the lowest possible rates on quality term life insurance. Term life rates are at all-time lows, and we can save you up to 70%. If you already have coverage, you could be paying too much. One call.
Do you owe the IRS $10,000 or more in back taxes? Are you being audited or investigated? Has the IRS sent you a letter demanding payment? You may not owe what they claim. Make this free call to the Tax Doctor now. Let them negotiate with the IRS on your behalf. Call 800-631-9123. 800-631-9123. That's 800-631-9123.
Ladies and gentlemen, artists like Loretta Lynn and Dolly Parton and others, you know what? They brought out the things that matter most in life. The American way, conveying great American values, hard work, biblical teachings, loving and honoring parents, gratitude for what one has, and enjoying the simple things in life. Now, I know I've repeated that a couple of times, but it's on purpose. I'm not just not realizing what I'm saying and repeating myself out of ignorance. I'm intentionally driving those values home, ladies and gentlemen. Okay? That's what we got to remember, a more righteous period in our nation's history. That's critical. But sadly, ladies and gentlemen, this is a hard-hitting political talk show, and therefore we got to contrast this. There's communism out there, and it's been slowly but surely weaving its way into the fabric of the whole world. The United States, no exception. Our dear buddy, G. Edward Griffin. By the way, he has an event coming up November the 12th. I think it's the 12th and 13th. RedPillExpo.org, I think it is, or TheRedPillExpo.org. It's in Salt Lake City. G. Edward Griffin, the guy's 90 years old and still tearing it up for the sacred cause of liberty. Dear friend of mine, we will be at his event in Salt Lake City. We hope you go as well. Meanwhile, he had an incredible interview with a former communist, I guess you could say. I think you say his name, Yuri Bezmenov, who defected to the United States, who stood up for liberty. When he got a taste of freedom, he loved it. And Chris, you have the details of this incredible interview.
G. Yes, it was conducted in 1984 with, like you said, J. Edward Griffin, the author of Creature from Jekyll Island, which is a book that everybody should read. That was kind of my introduction into the banking system, The Creature from Jekyll Island. Anyway, 1984, he interviewed this former propagandist for the KGB. He talks about why he defected to the United States in 1970, Yuri Bezmenov, as a high-ranking KGB officer because of moral indignation. And we'll talk about why he defected and what made him morally indignant about some of the things that he was required to do as his KGB agent. But he starts off by saying that the Soviet Union was artificially propped up by the Western, by the West, specifically the United States. You know, throughout the entire existence, it started at the beginning of World War II, where we literally gave them war material throughout the entire war. And that was the excuse that we used, of course, was that he was fighting Nazism, or that they were fighting Nazism. And ever since then, up until the so-called fall of the Soviet Union, we have been giving them money, we have been giving them grain and all sorts of other support. And he talks about that. And I think, Cameron, you've got that quote where he says that the West needs to quit giving the Soviet Union aid. Or you've got that video clip.
But until this Soviet junta is being supported by the Western so-called imperialists, that is, multinational companies, establishments, governments, and let's face it, intellectuals, so-called academia in the United States is famous for supporting the Soviet system. As long as the Soviet junta will keep on receiving credits, money, technology, grain deals, and political recognition from all these traitors of democracy or freedom, there is no hope, there is not much hope for changes in my country, and the system will not collapse by itself simply because it's being nourished by so-called American imperialism. This is the greatest paradox in history of mankind, when capitalist world supports and actively nourishes its own destructor.
I think you're trying to tell us something.
Oh,
in
yes.
This country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was the quote. So basically, Yuri Bezmenov, and he was intimately aware of what the KGB was doing in foreign countries. And this whole time, they were feigning weakness so that they could get aid from the United States and other Western countries. And an idiot should know that you don't give your enemy material support. Why would you do that? But yet America, even under Ronald Reagan, for his 8-year term as president, continued to give the Soviet Union grain and money, thinking that, you know, if we just be nice to them, maybe they'll change their minds about oppressing their citizens and trying to convert the rest of the world to communism.
Yeah,
but that never worked.
The lie about this, ladies and gentlemen, is this idea that, hey, if we lead by kindness and example, if we give them money and support, you know, they'll be our friends, and they'll be our, and it reminds me of The Ultimate Gift, the incredible movie. You know, Jason was this little punk kid and had a ton of friends. He was the rich, rich grandson. He had an endowment and plenty of money, and he had a bunch of friends. He had a girlfriend that was pretty and wow. But then it came a challenge in his life, and he had to see if he had a real friend, and he didn't have a single friend. Real friends are built on mutual respect, on respect for one another's values. Real friends are built on godly principles, ladies and gentlemen, not compromise. Well, this incredible interview in 1984 talking about the four stages of subversion, if you will, brought out by G. Edward
Ideological
Griffin,
subversion.
Our dear friend G. Edward Griffin, he talked about why he defected to the United States, Chris. This is important to understand, too.
Yeah. So let's talk about that. Why did he defect to the United States? And this is extremely revealing why he did, because he did have a conscience. I mean, he went along you know, with his assignment, he was a privileged citizen of the Soviet Union, because as a member of the KGB, obviously you don't live the same lifestyle that the rank and file citizen of the Soviet Union live. You live a luxurious lifestyle. And he was stationed, when he defected, he was stationed in India. And he was just going along recruiting people to the Soviet way, trying to Sovietize the country of India. And he was quite successful. He would bring dignitaries like professional athletes, professional actors and actresses and professors to the Soviet Union. He would wine and dine them. And then he would send them back with instructions to basically do whatever they can to undermine traditional Indian society. But what happened is, and this was in 1970, at this juncture in the interview, Yuri Bezmenov explains why certain ideologically minded pro-Soviet journalists with which he was personally acquainted, Sam, were slated for execution. So up until this time, he didn't realize the magnitude of the work that he was doing. He didn't realize that eventually some of the people that he was working with intimately and with whom he was friends were ultimately going to be executed. Okay. And he says that the KGB decided that when counter-revolution, now this, sometimes his English isn't that easy to understand, but I will read it word for word. He says the KGB, this is a quote, the KGB decided that when counter-revolution or drastic changes to the political structure in India, they will have to go because they know too much. Now, let me interpret that in my own English. There are certain ideologically minded people, we have millions of them here in America, who buy in ideologically to socialism. They think it really is going to improve society in spite of the mountains and mountains of evidence throughout history that it doesn't. And he says that they will be the first people to go when revolution is implemented in their respective country, Sam. It's not people like you and me that will go for it. I mean, eventually we will go if we don't go along with the plan. But it's these ideologues. And he said, he goes on to say, you see, because the useful idiots, the leftists who are idealistically believing in the beauty of the Soviet socialist or communist or whatever system, when they get disillusioned, they become the worst enemies. That's why my KGB instructor specifically made the point, never bother with leftists. Are you hearing what I'm laying down here, Sam? This is amazing.
Absolutely. And it really talks about the intentional subversion, folks. Do you know what ideological subversion is? Okay. Ideological means that, you know what? There's a set of ideas that they subscribe to and unify around. Okay. And that's why I spent so much time talking about the family values and the American principles that we used to rally around. That was our ideological belief system. Okay, and God, family, and country, the protection of life, liberty, and property, that's what we stick with, believe in, support, etc. But G. Edward Griffin brings out with this KGB bad guy that turns freedom lover. You know what? As long as we prop up the Soviet Union and these ideological subversions, we're in trouble. And the threat to family is a control mechanism. Alcohol is a control mechanism. There are more, the media being a control mechanism. We'll talk about it all in seconds on your radio.
There has been no evidence of widespread voter fraud.
The 2020 elections were one of the most corrupt in history. See the proof for yourself.
We tracked 2,000 mules making multiple ballot drops.
2,000 mules. The shocking new movie from Dinesh D'Souza.
One mule made 53 trips to 20 drop boxes.
2,000 mules. Join the special virtual premiere and Q&A on May 7th. Get your tickets now. Available only at 2000mules.com. 2000mules.com. Sponsored by Salem Media Group.
Do you know what is great about America? Ask an Immigrant. Ask an Immigrant is a new podcast dedicated to helping Americans, especially our youth, value, appreciate, and be grateful for the freedoms we have here in America. Join host Lydia Wallace Nuttall as she interviews immigrants from around the world to discover their inspiring personal stories about why they came to America. To learn more about why America is the most prosperous, greatest country in the world, download the Loving Liberty app or go to lovingliberty.net.
Why does the left lie constantly? Because they get spiritual power from lying. The lies come from Satan, the father of lies. John 8:44. Here's how the political lying process works. Satan provides the beast with a lie. Then the more they use the lie, the more spiritual power they get. Look, the media is a lie multiplier, and this multiplication gives more evil, spiritual power to the beast, and that can overwhelm and even deceive the body of Christ, especially when the body is being disobedient to the head. The churches today are incorporated, so they're subordinate to human government. They obey the beast and do nothing to restore our national relationship with God. And the government shall be on his shoulders, Isaiah 9:6. That verse is not for the present-day church. Rather, it is for the end-time church, the body of the line of Judah. A message from Christ Kingdom Ministries.
We're talking about an incredible interview back in 1984 conducted by our dear friend and freedom-loving American G. Edward Griffin. And he interviewed the former propagandist and KGB agent, Yuri Bezmenov. Okay? And this interview is shocking, ladies and gentlemen. He talks about why he defected to the United States in 77. He talks about, hey, you know what?
1970.
I'm sorry, 1970. He talks about how he had his moral belief system just absolutely scream at him and saying, you know what? You're trying to subvert the best country on the face of the earth. He got it. He understood and defected to the United States, ladies and gentlemen. But as long as the United States keeps propping up the Soviet system, it will prosper, okay? And this is very interesting to note, ladies and gentlemen. Jan Molina says, quote, can we say that the speech, quote, President Vaclav Havel gave in the early 1990s to the U.S. Congress was nothing but a carefully prepared deception based on lies? Because this is what we're talking about. The United States is going along with this, ladies and gentlemen. And it is absolutely psychotic and satanic, but they're doing it in several different ways. Before we get to the three ways, though, the family, alcohol, and the media, we want to play one of these clips so you hear in his own words, Chris.
So the clip, this is what put Yuri Bezmenov over the top when he decided to defect. And by the way, defecting is not an easy thing to do. If they catch you, most likely you will be executed. So this was not an easy thing for him and his wife to do at the time, but he did it and he did it successfully. And I'm glad that he did because he was able to impart this very, very valuable information to us. So let's hear in his own words the justification for his defection. Go ahead, Cameron.
In New Delhi, to my horror, I discovered that in the files where people were doomed to execution, there were names of pro-Soviet journalists with whom I was personally friendly.
Pro-Soviet?
Yes. They were idealistically minded leftists who made several visits to USSR. And yet, the KGB decided that come revolution or drastic changes in political structure of India, they will have to go.
Why is that?
Because they know too much. Simply because, you see, the useful idiots, the leftists who are idealistically believing in the beauty of Soviet socialist or communist or whatever system, when they get disillusioned, they become the worst enemies. That's why my KGB instructors specifically made the point, never bother with leftists. Forget about these political prostitutes. Aim higher. This was my instruction. Try to get into large circulation, established conservative media, rich, filthy rich movie makers, intellectuals, so-called academic circles, cynical, egocentric people who can look into your eyes with angelic expression and tell you a lie. These are the most recruitable people, people who lack moral principles, who are either too greedy or too suffer from self-importance. They feel that they matter a lot. These are the people who KGB wanted very much to recruit.
But to eliminate the others, to execute the others, don't they serve some purpose? Wouldn't they be the ones they rely on?
They serve purpose only at the stage of destabilization of a nation. For example, your leftists, in United States, all these professors and all these beautiful civil rights defenders, they are instrumental in the process of the subversion only to destabilize the nation. When their job is completed, they are not needed anymore. They know too much. Some of them, when they get disillusioned, when they see that Marxist-Leninists has come to power, obviously they get offended. They think that they will come to power. That will never happen, of course. They will be lined up against the wall and shot. But they may turn into the most bitter enemies of Marxist-Leninists when they come to power. And that's what happened in Nicaragua. You remember most of these former Marxist-Leninists.
Wow, is that not prophetic? This interview was conducted in 1984. How long has that been? That's been over 30 years. Over almost 40 years now. Was that not prophetic?
You could call it prophetic, except for he knew the playbook from the Soviets and from the KGB because he was taught that propaganda. It took when he realized that his deceptive actions would result in mass murder. The Spirit of God bore witness to him that I cannot go down that road. I must change. And he then doubles down and explains why he defected. Beznov defected because they know too much. In other words, he defected because he realized this con game, these lies and deceptions would eventually destroy everything. And so he goes on. This is, in my opinion, a riveting interview because he talks about the threat to the family as a control mechanism. Hey, all they got to do is threaten your family. Well, this guy defected, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, so he was
a very difficult thing to do, Chris.
Yeah, so as a KGB agent, you all, and especially ones that are stationed in foreign countries, and most of them are, they're required to be married. And it's not because they care, you know, about your happiness. It's because, number one, he said, they want you to have children as well. Because now, not only can they threaten you and your life, they can threaten your wife and your children. So it's a blackmail mechanism. So they require marriage as KGB agents. And not only that, you know, you can, if your wife or you decide to defect, you know, that there are two people that can potentially tattle on you. So anyway, that's why they're required to be married. In fact, he was married three times. His first two wives were arranged. His third wife was his choice. And that's the one that he brought here to America eventually, as when he defected. So alcohol, he mentions alcohol as a control mechanism. So when entertaining foreign dignitaries, and sometimes he would bring dignitaries from India back to Moscow, and he would entertain them, and obviously he would propagandize them and tell them how wonderful the system was. And by the way, when they toured, for example, a preschool or a kindergarten or a Russian marriage, these would not be typical Russian marriages that typical Russians would engage in, or kindergarten or whatever. They would be propaganda venues. In other words, they would be set up to give you the impression of prosperity and happiness, when in fact they were specifically arranged to make it look as if the Soviet Union was much more prosperous than it really was. But anyway, going back to the alcohol as a control mechanism, his instructions as a KGB propagandist, Sam, was to make sure that the dignitaries that he brought over to Moscow to propagandize were well liquored up. And of course, for obvious reasons, because you're much more pliable and you're much more susceptible to propaganda when you're in a jovial mood. And, you know, even
and
when
oftentimes,
your faculties are
oftentimes after they alcohol. Apply the wine or the drugs, ladies and gentlemen, then what they do is they get you into a compromising situations so that you're absolutely controllable. They get you in a situation where, you know, it's women or men or gay or whatever the case may be, to the point where, you know what, you can't really now stand on your own two feet independent and think and believe as you will, because they've got the big compromise on you. And this is something really important to understand, right? Because now your family might know. And the alcohol or the drugs kind of is the what, you know, precedes the precedes the bad acts, right? Most people might not get in those situations, and they might think straight of who they're dealing with. But you know what? When you got alcohol, or when you got these different things, understand they've gone way beyond alcohol now that he talks about. They use all kinds of drugs and rape drugs and this and that and the other and whatever else. But I'm telling you, they get everybody in these compromised situations where they're absolutely, what's the word I'm looking for?
Blackmailable?
They're controlled. Yeah, blackmailed. They're blackmailed, folks, to the point where, you know what? Most of them cannot speak out. You know, look at Jeffrey Epstein and the Lolita plane and the sex island and everything else that Clinton was on. Now we're getting intel and information on it. Just highlighting that, hey, you know what? You've
forget about Clinton, president.
You've highlighted a president of the United States that was absolutely compromised to the core, Chris.
Well, you know, forget about Bill Clinton. Donald Trump, according to Ghislaine Maxwell, and I know she may or may not be truthful all the time, Donald Trump went over to the pedophile island that Jeffrey Epstein controlled. So, I mean, when you look at the average president that we've had in our lifetime, Sam, and they have not, I can't think of any except maybe Ronald Reagan, who was a paragon of morality. You know, they've all been compromised. You know, so this has relevance to us today. So, yeah. So you want to talk about the Look magazine article as a control mechanism?
Yeah, because remember, folks, this was back in 1967. Understand that's about when we started discovering Operation Mockingbird. So there's documented 66 ways from Sunday about this subversion that took place. And this former KGB agent comes clean in this incredible interview, backing up the Mockingbird evidence we've already got, folks. Listen up, Chris.
Okay, so there's a news agency. I think it's still in existence today. It's called Novosti. It's pronounced Novosti or Novosti. They pronounce it Novosti in the interview. So in 1967, to commemorate the 50th anniversary of the Bolshevik Revolution, a 10-man crew from Look magazine, which is an American magazine. I remember as a kid, you know, seeing that in doctor's offices and things. Yuri Bezmenov was attached to this group of journalists who came over to memorialize in this magazine the 50th anniversary of the Bolshevik Revolution. And he said that from the first page to the last page, it was a package of lies, which was presented to Americans as opinions and deductions of American journalists. And this is where I talk about the Potemkin Village effect. Are you familiar with that term, the Potemkin Village, Sam?
I'm not.
I don't want to go too deeply into it. So what a Potemkin Village is, you know, just to be brief, is a facade.
But I will say, remember, Hillary told you that it takes a village, ladies and gentlemen. So now listen up. Chris, buddy, you're supposed to go. All right, we lost Chris, ladies and gentlemen. We'll get him back. So I was telling you that it takes a village, right? You got to understand that it takes a village. That's what Hillary pointed out. I wanted to kind of highlight that to put it in perspective. But when they use the family, when they use alcohol and drugs, when they use this Look magazine as a control mechanism, okay, as an agent for the, I think you say it, Novosti News Agency in 1967, this Yuri Bezmenov guy was attached to a group of writers from Look magazine from the United States. And they wrote a, quote, 50-year anniversary piece on the Soviet Union. And Bezmenov said of this work from that time, from the first page to the last page, was a package of lies. So they use the media to absolutely control us. They use alcohol and drugs to get those people to be compromised. They use threat to family as their control mechanisms. It's pure evil. We'll tell you about this village concept in seconds on your radio.